We're trying to go live. Shut up, we're going live. Hello and welcome to the House Rugby Chat. How are you doing? Hopefully you're keeping nice and safe in lockdown. But we might not have any sports, but we have plenty of sports to talk about. And yes, Augustin Pichot has decided to run for the chairman of World Rugby, which has given us plenty to talk about, and that's what we're going to be focusing on mainly this evening. And I say we, because joining me, I have got John O'Connor and Stephen, I've forgotten your surname, Cornflake, that'll do.
Not my surname, but we'll go with it.
Good evening, Steve.
I just see, I'll go to the bank, and I'll say, what's your surname there, sir? Steve Cornflake.
There's a man to listen to. Mr. Cornflake.
Absolutely. You say Mr. Kellogg's. Yeah, you've got loads of money in the bank. Absolutely.
I wish.
Oh, dear. And John, how are you doing, sir?
I'm good, thank you, guys.
Good. And hopefully you're both staying safe and in your bubbles. I went to the supermarket today and I've stocked up on a couple of cases of beer and lots of frozen food. So that's it. I'm not going to the supermarket again until we come out of lockdown. That's my plan. So there we go, folks. Six packs of coffee pods. That's all my essentials. Two things of ice cream, three bars of chocolate. I could have done with more chocolate, but I can get that from the local dairy. Two boxes of beer, and six packs of coffee. I've got all my essentials. I'm good.
This is why you people.
This is why I shoot people. But no, sorry, John. I think you cut out there at the inappropriate moment.
I was saying, if I'm tuning to hear about your show.
Absolutely, it's what it's all about. It's where it's all at. Let's talk. And unless you guys got some key tips as to essentials you have to buy at the supermarket, anything in particular? What's your? Otherwise, we'll get on to Augustin Pichot's manifesto.
Food's a good start.
Food. Eating's cheating.
I don't know why I should go to the supermarket. God.
Get the beers in.
But you see, I live in the south and we're in Invercargill, whereas you don't buy beer and wine or anything from the supermarkets down here. So we have bottle shops actually still open, unlike the rest of the country. So we can just go to the bottle shop and buy beer and whatever. We don't need to go to the supermarket.
What do you mean your bottle shop's still open?
Because we're a licensing trust, so supermarkets don't sell it. So the bottle shops are allowed to stay open.
Ah, I see. There you go.
Learn something new every day, eh?
You do.
Not that it's really bad.
And John has fallen asleep on the other side of the screen, but never mind. So anyway, move on to Pichot's 6-point plan. So Pichot left it up until the last second before applying, putting his entry in. Everyone was expecting Bill Beaumont to get in as chairman unopposed, but Pichot has made it an actual vote, which is, wow, this is really scary stuff for World Rugby. This doesn't normally happen, people actually having to vote, jeez, about this kind of thing. It's supposed to be an old boys network that sorts things out. Augustin Pichot, interestingly enough, doesn't have a running mate, so he doesn't have a vice chairman. So the vice chairman will be Laporte, who is running with Bill Beaumont. So it'll be interesting to see if Augustin Pichot gets in, and he has Laporte as his vice president, vice chairman, how that kind of works. But that is water under the bridge. Now, before we came on air, Steve, you had one crucial question for us. What was it?
Yeah, well, you probably might have caught a little snippet of it as we started, as I was dribbling on. But pretty much, I was asking Paul, what exactly is Bill Beaumont actually offering in counteract to what Pichot is put out here? So we talk about this plan he's got the 6-point plan, which we'll go over in time, but he's up against nothing really, because Beaumont's gone into this thinking, yep, this is how it goes. We go in, we have to election of some sorts where no one opposes you, and you win and carry on, and he's the chairman again. Nothing really happens. He doesn't have to say, oh, I'm going to offer this and this. And here we've got a bit of a difference now, where Pichot's coming in and saying he's going to offer all this stuff and there's nothing to counter it. So that's what we're kind of just talking about. What is Beaumont offering here? Because he seems to be just putting himself in there. And I mean, has his last tenure really been that amazing and leadership wonderful that he just waltzes straight through here? He's kind of put himself in a bad spot. I think he needs to come out here and say, well, this is what I'm going to offer, because it's actually, like you said, it's like, wow, it's a vote now, and it has to have a competition, or has he even got a leg to stand on in this election?
Well, let's see. There's been a successful Japan Rugby World Cup under his tenure, but that was voted for before he came in. He held a vote as to who should have it after Japan, and his organisation recommended South Africa, and then everybody voted for France. So clearly that went well. We've not had any particularly big drug scandals or sex scandals. So he's pretty clean there. But yeah, essentially the only thing that's come up, well, two things. One is that vote that South Africa got upset about, funnily enough, and Ireland were like, but what about us? We're little people. We're never going to have a chance again. And France won it. And then the other one was basically Augustin Pichot's idea of bringing in this Nations Championship every year, which obviously got shot down because Six Nations didn't... Well, everyone said that Six Nations didn't want relegation. In reality, Six Nations was going to be getting money from CVC, and the marketing company behind this idea was a different marketing company out of Switzerland. And so, funnily enough, although that's one of the reasons why it didn't work. But everyone's blaming relegation was the issue. Well, it was kind of. There was also a money issue, which is why it might work a second time round, which we'll get on to later. So far, yeah, you're right. All he's done is run a vote which went against what he said should be happen, or his part, or his group said to happen, and then his vice chairman came up with an idea that didn't happen. That seems to be the extent of his entire tenure, as far as I can see.
Would he have had much of a say? I guess he would have, as the whole group, though, about when the typhoons and all that stuff happened during the World Cup, though. That could have gone very, very wrong. And I think you've got to give him credit, or I guess the whole group credit, for how they dealt with that, because that could have been a travesty if it didn't go how everyone liked. But it could have been a lot worse. It could have been a lot worse.
The reason why I shake my head is because that's a great credit to the Japanese organizing crew, right?
Yeah.
So yes, Rugby World Cup is nominally involved, but it's the people on the ground in Japan who pulled that together, right? So yeah, the same the 25 though. Years... What's that?
More the rescheduling, though, and getting as many games to happen possible while still not having the games that could have potentially been dangerous. I know, well, the groundwork, yeah, I know that's nothing to do with them. That was Japan as a whole, just utterly out of this world.
The whole organisation is not done by Rugby World Cup. It's done by a committee that's appointed and runs from the moment that it starts, where they're awarded a bid. Then they plan this whole thing all the way through, and obviously they ramp up with the number of people that are employed, starting from the very beginning, right? And then they go all the way through. The same, you have an organizing committee based in that country. So that organizing committee obviously had to run decisions World Rugby in order to be able to say, look, we can't go there, but we can go there, and that is safe and that isn't safe, and this is the story. But, pretty much like FIFA does, FIFA lays down certain ground rules and makes sure that those are met, and they have like a auditing function that it's meeting the standards. But the actual legwork of getting everything done, including the scheduling, is done by the organizing committee, which is, of course, paid and financed by the people who are hosting, because you don't want World Rugby or the governing body to have to pay for this. They just want to open their hands, right? So, yes, so with a pinch of salt, mate, that's a huge feather in the cap of the Japanese organizing committee. Not saying there's not some representation on that committee, but people, yeah, what they pulled off was amazing.
It's pretty much what you're saying, is that they had nothing to do with it, which is kind of what my fishing question was around that same topic, whether they had anything to do with it or not. So pretty much the only real kind of possible controversy they could have had, they really had nothing to do with.
Yeah. Well, actually, so there is... they rubber stamped that. Christopher Edwards Bailey in the live chat just pointed out that there was the Women's Rugby World Cup, which went fine. There was also the Sevens Rugby World Cup, men's and women's, in San Francisco, which which again, I think was decided before Beaumont and Peashot came in, but I could be wrong. But they did have to bail out American USA Rugby, so they actually went ahead and didn't go bust. So there was that controversy. Now, USA Rugby has filed Chapter 11, so it looks like that money that World Rugby lent to the USA Rugby ain't coming back anytime soon. So $5 million down the drain there, or whatever, however much it was, went away. So that's obviously another that's a black mark in sort of. Mm. But they couldn't afford for, to be honest. Once you decided it's going to be in San Francisco, when you hear about 3 or 4 months out that, look, mate, we might go bust, it might not happen. The only thing World Rugby can do is step in and go, this is not going bust. We're going to make sure this happens. Because if that had gone bust, the negative PR in would just be way, way, way too expensive to have to deal with.
I don't know. We've got a history in the last 12 years of the world and propping up organizations that didn't form or were too greedy and in many cases proven to be the right decision. I don't think that they had to do that. Could have come up with another plan, a fallback position, another host if necessary, and let a rugby or American rugby, whatever it is, US rugby, reach the wall, and then they could have sunk that $5 million into another thing. But yeah, anyway, this is a difference of opinion here when it comes to what they could have done. But I think that what Pichot has done is a master of genius, because I am here right at the end of the period where we could Beaumont to put nothing forward, because he thought he wasn't contesting against anybody, so why would he need to put something forward and then not fail to live up to his commitment to what he was going to do? So most people in this kind of position will hold their cards to the chest so that they don't, let's say, fail to deliver what they said. So he's put nothing forward, just like Stephen said, and then boom, in the 11th hour, here comes Fisher with a manifesto, a list of things that he's recommending and what he's going to achieve. And he looks like a go-getter with a plan and the man, whatever. And Bill Beaumont looks like a hit. Meanwhile, he probably has some things on his want-to-do list, but he hasn't released them. And I think it's a bit of a masterstroke there from Fisher.
Yeah, we've still got the 11th of May from memory, I think it is the actual vote. So, I mean, there is still, we're still 3 weeks away from the vote. So there's plenty of time for Beaumont to say what he wants to do in that time.
But now he looks
reactionary.
That's exactly right. So now he looks like he didn't have anything until somebody with a real plan arrived. And then he looks like he thought, I better come up with something, right? Instead of riding on the coattails of the old boys club. Because, of course, remember, this is not only a former England captain, this is a former British Lions captain, da-da-da-da-da, on and on and on. So he is absolutely, he at least appears to be your archetypal member of the old boys club here.
So actually, the actual ballot is on May the 10th, which is a Sunday. Interestingly enough, so yes, but we do have, so yeah, in 4 Sundays time, so just under 4 weeks, we will have the vote. So yes, yeah, but as you're right, yeah, it's going to be interesting, because the one of the things we could end up with in here is it's turkeys voting for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things we've come through with Bill Beaumont's tenure is that the radical ideas seem to have come from his vice president, not from him. So he's allowed somebody else to put ideas forward, and then he's kind of been around and supported them, but they're not kind of his things that have failed, if you kind of air quotes there. And if we look at, he's doing something a little bit similar here with Bernard Laporte, has come out and with this idea of this World Club Rugby Championship that he wants, that he can see happening now with the whole COVID things. Now, he did say that was his own idea and didn't tie it to Bill Beaumont, but that's the only manifesto pledge from that sort of group that I've kind of heard. And he did caveat it with lots of, this is just an idea, throwing it out there, folks. Let's see if we, let's see if it flies, rather than going, this is what I want to do. So that's the only manifesto piece I can see from the Beaumont Bernard Laporte side of it. And Bernard Laporte is standing unopposed for vice chairman. Chris just said, yeah, I guess South Africa got the Sevens World Cup, which I guess is where the next one is. See, that's how important it is on my radar that I didn't even know where the next Sevens World Cup was going to be, to be honest with you.
Whoop-de-doo. Best bid for a World Cup recommended. But hey, you know the problem is, for South Africa can't offer matches to Ireland, Scotland, Wales, and England.
That's not the reason.
Italy.
The reason.
All right.
It was a small country.
I'm taking you here a bet that we will see matches being hosted in their Six Nation Brotherhood for a French World Cup. I'll take you a bet right now. You'll see it happen.
The reason they got it was because they offered more money. And Japan, I mean, one of the reasons that Sun Wolves getting thrown out of the Super Rugby is because Japan voted for France, not for South Africa. And they voted for France because France offered up more cash, which meant World Rugby would have more cash to give Tier 2 nations. That's why they did it. It was purely a cash vote.
So you're saying there won't be any games held at Twickenham for a French World Cup?
Correct.
You heard that, Steve, right? You heard that, listeners? We'll see. We'll see when they announce the slate of matches. We'll see, sir.
Well, the city they mentioned so far do not include those. Do not include any outside of France. So, but South Africa
I'm sure they don't.
But I'll be honest. For me, we shouldn't even have a Rugby World Cup for Sevens, because the pinnacle for Sevens is the Olympics. Right, the World Cup is just another tournament that no one really cares about. From my point of view, it's a slightly bigger Sevens tournament, but it's just another Sevens tournament. New Zealand should be hosting the Women's Rugby World Cup next year. That'll be yes. We'll have to see whether we have to travel and whether we open our borders by then, as to see whether that happens. Christopher says, yeah, under Beaumont's tenure, South Africa won the Sevens, France won the World Cup, and New Zealand won the Women's World Cup. Southern Hemisphere bias. No. I think all that anybody wanted was the Rugby World Cup. The other two are kind of like, please can someone host it for us, because it has to happen somewhere.
Of course.
it's crumbs.
Really, what happens with the World Cup, really, is it's a trial run for the format for the Olympics. So they trial out with a large group of countries, a large number of nations. They trial out their system through to a quarterfinal, semifinal, final for the gold. So that's basically what they do. They try out over 3 days. Let's try this new structure. Does it work? Yes, it works. Then we use it at the next Olympic.
That's the Sevens Rugby World Cup we're talking about there. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, that's where I'm talking about, the Sevens Rugby World Cup. It's not like, oh, yay, we've got the... South Africa's got a Sevens tournament. New Zealand's got a Sevens tournament. You know, it's not... these are not huge money spinners. These are not prestigious tournaments where tourists fly in for weeks at a time and travel around the country attending multiple games.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so that's the Beaumont tenure and manifesto for you. So let's have a look at Pichot's 6-point plan. Number one, addressing the challenges of COVID-19 as part of a wider alignment of the global playing calendar, creating a compelling narrative. We've heard that one before, haven't we? This bit was a bit different though. For men, women, and women in sevens, in 15s, and sevens. Clubs, unions, and private equity firms will be consulted about an annual tournament featuring 12 to 14 tests per nation per year.
So is he saying that they're going to have a unified calendar?
That's what he's trying to do, yes. Well,
because I listened to that, actually, and all it says, I'm going to talk to people, and what is he saying he's going to do?
He's trying to have a unified international calendar, not necessarily a club one. So, a bit like, okay, so his proposal for this previously was the Six Nations, the Rugby Championship becomes six teams. The Six Nations is already six teams, and those 12 teams all play each other once each year for 11 test matches, mm-hmm. right? And then you have a couple of extra test matches on top of that. That was previously his proposal. He's basically going to come out with something pretty similar again. Mm-hmm. Is essentially what he's trying to say. Quite what he's expecting for the women's 15s and for the sevens. I think the sevens has got a calendar that people already understand. It has a narrative. Apart from the Rugby World Cup, the Sevens Rugby World Cup thing, the rest of it has a narrative. You understand what's going on. It's two. Each stop is paired up, so you have two stops each. So you have two weekends, four or five weekends off, two weekends on, four or five weekends off, and you can understand it, how it all works. So I don't think there's much work to do on the Sevens side except for add more women's stops, because they only have six. They need more than that each year.
I feel like I'm what's it, Norman No, tonight. But like I'm Mr. Contrary here. Step in here, Steve. Good-looking Steve. If I'm doing that right, but I listen to that and I think that's certainly not what you would teach in a project to young project managers about having smart goals, specific, doable, attainable. You know, where you can actually say yes, we did it. No, we didn't. I mean, it's like nebulous. What is, I'm going to make you all feel good, right? I don't know if we should start the funky music, white boy. I don't know. This is
So basically, yeah, addressing the challenge of COVID-19, well, let's be honest, everybody has, Beaumont's going to also try and address the challenge of the COVID-19. We've heard from several of the unions saying, look, rugby will not look the same after COVID-19. We've got the opportunity to rewrite things and do things. So as you say, is he saying anything here that Bill Beaumont isn't saying? Not really, apart from the fact that he wants to try and put his Nations Cup back together again. I think that's the only thing here that's different between the two of them.
Which isn't really much different to what he was already suggesting, is it? He's just jumping on the same old train while he's trying to be a bit opportunistic with the timing. Really, isn't it? With the whole COVID-19 thing, he's making it sound a lot better in the situation. There's a good chance to put his plan from whatever year, a couple of years ago it was, into action. But I agree. I agree with you, John. It seems a bit, just a bit broad. Like, what does he actually mean? Like, what is it actually going to entail? Is it going to be an actual tournament, like it states there? So is it going to be through to a league sort of situation? Or is this going to be one-off test matches against each nation? Or is it going to be in a certain place? Is it going to be all over the shop? Are they going to be traveling all over the show? Yeah, it's just not enough information, really. And what is it going to actually entail? Whether it actually is going to be a good idea or a bad idea? And that just needs a bit more detail on it. But yeah, I think it's a bit like his whole bidding thing, like he talked about before. Great timing, use the right words, use the right sort of indications, and the same thing here. It looks good until you probably look into it a bit deeper and it's missing a few little bits and pieces to make a fully fledged sort of idea. But, I mean, it's promising, and it always goes back to, what's the counteroffer? There isn't one. So it kind of looks good when everyone goes on about how they want to see a unified calendar. It just fits what people want to see.
Okay. So point number two.
So do we agree that we need a unified calendar where everybody starts around about the same time, just be reasonable, you know, but to start in the same month and finish in month? Do we agree that this is what rugby needs at the professional level?
It would make a lot more sense. Do we actually need it? No, we don't need it, but it would be a better place to be.
That's still not a yes, though. Is that what we need?
No, we don't need it.
No.
But it would be a better place.
You disagree.
I say we don't need it either. No.
Okay.
Well, I agree with Paul. It would be better and a good idea, potentially.
Okay.
But it depends how
something is. So is it better? Yeah. Is it better? I mean, is that the ideal that we would hope for, at least?
Yes, I think it's better.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
But it could be worse.
It could be a lot worse, yes.
Yeah. That's the thing. Comes up a plan and says, this is how it's going to work. Starts here. You play that. You do this. This is a full-fledged plan, outlay, numbers, dates, everything, bang. Then you can say, okay, that's good or that's bad. At the moment, it's just like, oh, we should all play at the same time. It's too much. Well, it's like this plan.
Okay, so point number
two. I mean, Paul and I have had these many times, these discussions about should we have the same season, right? And I'm prepared to say, even if the Southern Hemisphere shifts their season, if the Northern Hemisphere are going to stick their head in the sand and say, we want to play in winter when temperatures are below zero at night and think that we're going to draw people, okay, do it then. Then shift the Southern Hemisphere one way or another. Shift the two seasons, because that's how you'll lengthen players' careers. Right, and you're more likely to see players playing for longer than what we have at the moment.
Look, I think we're both saying, yeah, we should have change. Do we have to have change? No. Rugby will still keep going in its dysfunctional style. It won't not happen because it's dysfunctional. It'll still happen, but just dysfunctionally as it does now.
I'm with you.
Point two, a democratic governance structure. A long-term goal of scrapping the weighted vote system that gives more power to wealthy nations, as well as revenue sharing.
Mm-hmm.
So, for those that don't know, the way that the voting system works is that if you only get on the council if you're part of the Rugby World, if you're actually at the Rugby World Cup, anyway, you get a second vote if you're part of the Six Nations or the Rugby Championship, and then you get a third vote. Again, those people can get a third vote as well. For people like Fiji, Samoa, USA, Canada, they can only get one vote. But we also have votes for the European Confederation, the Pacific Confederation, the Africa Confederation, the Asia Confederation, and the Americas Confederation. So there's also one vote for each of those. So what he's suggesting here is that countries like England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, France, Italy, New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, and Argentina should just get one vote, not three, like they currently do. Now, some people would say that actually he's saying there that everyone should just get one vote, regardless. At the moment, people like Fiji have struggled to get a vote. I think Fiji have just got theirs. I don't think Samoa and Tonga do, because you've got to at least, I think it's 3 years worth of audited accounts before you're allowed to get on the council and vote. And I think to a certain degree, that makes a lot of sense. Having corrupt people voting on the council is not a good place to be. So how do you do that? How do you put a framework in place without just saying, you're corrupt, you're not allowed to be on here? I think if he does go down that... Sorry?
It was not good looking, Steve.
What was that, sir? I missed him.
Sorry, John. Your connection this evening is not very good. You keep cutting out. John, we didn't hear what you said because you cut out. Your link.
Oh, okay. I was going to say that that finger, I presume, was pointing at me, not at good-looking Steve when it came to you. Corrupt.
I was trying to show to the
Because I put you so long, you know I'm not going to run away from you, my mate. But Steve, you wouldn't point the finger at.
I'm trying to point
you. You part of the world.
I'm pointing the finger.
You see, the English. You are French.
I'm pointing at our audience to show them what it feels like if they were Fiji getting told off. That's I'm trying to. So I think there needs to be those checks and balances in place like there are now, I'm not anti it going one vote, one country. I think we've had too much of the old boys network. So I would be comfortable with it going down to one vote each. One of the points that's been made is one of the test countries So one of the tier one countries has to vote for Pichot to get in.
Yeah.
There aren't two, so they have to break ranks. Now, clearly Argentina are the obvious ones that will probably break rank.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he probably will need more than that to do so.
Well, what's Argentina's free?
Revenue sharing. I think there should be some level of revenue sharing. But if you own your own stadium, you've got to pay it off somehow as well. There's also that. Item three: growing grassroots and youth game, including a focus on developing emerging nations such as Brazil and Tunisia. Again, this is something I think is happening already. I think a lot of it's down to the unions themselves, not about growing grassroots. I think there's a lot of investment already in these tier two, and tier three nations. I don't think there's much here that isn't happening already.
I think the big thing that he's going to offer these last two points, so the last one you just spoke about, the weighted system and revenue sharing, all that, plus this one about developing smaller nations, is that he was that smaller nation when he was a player. Back when he was playing, Argentina wasn't that tier one nation. They were probably a tier two nation, just behind that sort of thing. You know, they were grateful to get a match against the All Blacks or against England or something like that. It does really snap massively, like you talked about already, that old boy sort of club thing. So he is going to be passionate about this thing because he's lived that tier two life, and he knows what that's like, and he knows what they need to make that step up more than, you know, these guys that are just living that tier one dream for their whole career. So I think that's beneficial, and I think that's why he's really putting a focus on that, because I think he offers a lot different to what world rugby scene probably for ever in their whole leadership sort of period.
Yep, no, I agree with that one. Next then, this is the big one, let's be honest. This is the exciting one. This is what's the difference between him and this one that people have focused on.
I'm bracing myself, Paul. I'm bracing you, building it up.
I'm building this one up. A safe and entertaining game. Well, yeah, we know that, okay? Featuring a dedicated World Rugby Innovation Department. Dun, dun, dun. To look at projects such as Hawkeye technology and a flagship rugby computer game. That's the big one. He wants an entire department at World Rugby to make a computer game.
We've lost him. He's gone.
Well, we can see that Grandad's died. Okay, sorry, Grandad. What's gone? What's wrong?
This is the exciting, innovative, young, new voice. Oh, gosh.
Nailed it. That's it. That's what I was going to say. That's it. Age. Age is a massive thing. You've got a guy in his 40s versus a guy in, how old's Beaumont? Probably like nearly twice that age. Big difference. Big difference in focus. He has an idea of what the future does.
It's the innovation department.
Yeah.
Oh,
where do I see my application? I'm in. CV, where are you?
Bill Bowman, 68, by the way. There you go.
Oh, there you go. So he's over 50% older than him.
Gosh.
So, okay, John. I can see the kind of people seeing it as being frivolous. But if you look at this, especially in this time of lockdown, we've seen the NBA play the esports and keep fan engagement. We've seen it's taken off massively with the IndyCar and the NASCAR series, which have got several hundred thousand viewers per show on TV. With FIFA soccer is a big mainstream thing. A lot of the football teams now actually have professional e-game teams as part of their setup as well. So it sounds frivolous, but actually it is a way of engaging with fans.
Game is not important. I'm not saying it's not important, guys. Please. But like you said, here's the big thing. Here's the big difference maker. And I thought he was going to address some structural issue. He was going to talk about, you know, simplifying the rules of the game, getting rid of all this breakdown problem, changing something, getting, you know, something really that would address certain issues. And I mean, it's a, I'm sorry to say this, it's a bit of a no-brainer that if you want to keep up with other sports, you need to be in the electronic gaming space, absolutely, without question. But I just, you know, sometimes I think the world rugby is just so much like that adage that they couldn't organize a piss up in a brewery, you know. Really, when you see that this portfolio, this is the radical portfolio, and you go, no. Come on. If this is right, then anyway, this is, I think, part of the problem. I'm still dealing with this legacy of former amateurs and professional game. And maybe we just need to put on our big boy pants and realize that we are a 24-year-old professional sport. And it's going to take some time. We're like young adults, and it's probably going to take a whole generation of professional players to come through and run this like it should.
So, John, you were cutting out through there, but basically what you were saying there is that, yeah, look, we're still a young sport professionally. We're acting like amateurs. We've got a bunch of amateur people at the top now trying to run a professional sport. They don't know what professional sport is, and that actually it's going to take a while. It's going to take another generation before we actually become a proper professional sport in the same way that, say, an NBA or an NFL is. Stephen, are you in the same? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, to me, the Focus More thing would be the availability and the exposure that the sport would get from being involved in more of the esports sort of thing. There's no reason why the body or the sport needs to just wait things out. They need to be proactive. They need to make advancements. They need to make all the money they can get. They need to make all the exposure they can get. They need kids in England picking up a rugby ball, not kicking a rugby ball. How many millions of times you said that? They need kids in Brazil to be picking up the ball and not kicking the ball. Those markets are huge. Look at football. They're massive. They're gigantic. And how do you get into that? Yes, you got your sport in there. You got to have your sport. It has to be attractive. Your sport has to make people want to watch it. But it's not always available. Twitch, YouTube, anything like that, streaming services, video services are everywhere now. Even in these poorer countries that can't afford these high-level things, this is all available. Mm. They can see it anywhere. They can go to stores and shops that just show this sort of stuff. Esport gaming is massive. And it's exposure. You're seeing the players. You're seeing the teams. You're seeing the rules. You're learning the game. You're playing the game. And you can do it in your own time. You don't need to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to watch Saracens play someone. You can just see it anytime you like.
You get to watch. You get up to watch English rugby.
No, that's the point.
You take your temperature there. Wait.
No, but John's point is that this should be the manifesto for the conservative, run-of-the-mill candidate. This should not be the radical manifesto. The fact that this is considered the radical manifesto is, first of all, said challenges because of COVID-19 and to have a compelling narrative. Yeah, makes sense. Democratic governance structure. Yeah, okay, fine. Grow the grassroots. Yeah, sounds good. Involve mandatory athletes commission. And basically involve athletes in having a say in the running of the game. Yeah, makes sense. World rugby management fit for purpose. Reviewing internal structures, restore trust. Yeah, okay, fine. None of that is radical.
Yeah. like we've already talked about.
Yeah.
What happens? The guy that's already in charge just goes and gets in charge again. This him doing this is breaking ground. Why isn't there six guys doing this? Why isn't there a massive big thing where they all have to lay out their points? No, I'm not disagreeing with that at all. No.
Yep.
That's the best we got. How about tonight before we finish, we come up with five radical proposals in a radical, right? And I'll fire the first one. Okay. Then this time we were global professional rugby calendar. Well, we'll not stand for president again. Right? We'll be playing rugby at the same time across the same number of months. Boom. There's number one. Right? And I won't, if I don't get that across the board, 4 years I won't stand again. I was there for radical.
Yep. The other one we should be going towards is something along the lines of that we'll have a professional rugby teams in each, or at least one professional rugby team in the Pacific Islands. Actually, let's just get something that is needed.
And you know why? Look, you know why I'm jumping? Yes, it is right. It is the just thing to do. On top of that, us as rugby fans, we are being denied the opportunity of seeing the talent. Mallett, the former coach of the Springboks, said that in his opinion, the Fijians are the most gifted rugby players on the planet. And we are not seeing the full evolution of that talent. We should see more. I mean, to me, the player of the tournament at the World Cup was Radradra. Is that right? Who's the one on the wing?
Jimmy Radradra,
yeah.
The NRL player, yep.
Yeah, that's him. That was the player of the tournament. I loathe the fact that we don't get to see him until who knows when, right? We should be able to... I will go looking for Fiji the next time they play a test or on tour, simply because I want to see him play, right? So there is all of this talent out there. So yes, it's just, but so on top of that, it's allowing all this talent to come through, which we get to watch. So number two, any other suggestion?
You know what you've just both done? You've just both... What? Exactly stated a specific sort of item that you want to achieve. So you've both...
Yes.
It's completely against everything that's ever been stated in a proper actual application for this position. This is all protection.
No, we're going to do... Yeah.
Yeah, that's
what we're going to do.
It'll never happen.
Okay.
I'll tell you another one. That in 4 years' time, rules at the breakdown will be understandable to women.
Well, no. I'm not being sexist.
Hang on. Don't calm down. What I mean is, have you ever tried to eat the offside rule to a woman who doesn't know soccer? Now you take somebody to rugby, trying to explain to them what's happening, and you say to them, "Hey, you know what? This is the game that you haven't played. This is a great game." And they say, "Why did that whistle go?" And you go, "I don't know." And sometimes the commentators don't know. The problem is the rules. They say, "We will reduce these rules by a certain percentage and we will make it understandable for people who have not played the game, can come to the game and enjoy it because they understand it."
Yes, and I'm happy to say, but it's not to do with being woman or man. But yeah, that's what I'm going to take
up on. No. I think our people are big enough to understand what we're talking about here. The point is that people who've played the game for years and years battle to follow it, and why the referee is blowing up what's going. What chance does somebody have who didn't play it growing up?
Yeah, no, good, yeah. That point is fine. Yeah, I agree. Yep. Rules that are understandable to everybody.
Yeah, that are clear. Right?
Now, one thing would help is if actually everyone has to be a TV commentator for an international match has to be a qualified referee, so they actually understand what the hell the laws are, rather than just guessing and spouting rubbish. That would help. And to be fair to Brian Moore, a lot of people have a go at Brian Moore, but at least that's what he said he did. He went off and got himself to be a qualified referee, so that when he was commentating, he actually knew what he was talking about. Because let's be honest, a bunch of those commentators don't.
Yeah.
And it should be refreshed every year, just like because the laws do change every year, unfortunately.
Yes. So we've got still rugby teams in the Pacific Island, but simplifying the rules, we need a force.
There you go. All commentators of international or top tier club rugby have to be qualified referees.
No, that's not radical. And if you said you'd
really?
There's a couple we're going to take out and shoot. Now you're talking.
It would end the career of quite a bunch of them. Stephen,
honestly, Justin Marshall go to a referees course. That would be amazing.
Exactly. Boomfa. Of course, Steve, you're letting us down.
Jeez, I didn't even come prepared for a breakthrough, outstanding change of the game. You have to give me some time to think of one. Goodness gracious. I was focusing on these projected changes. Come on.
These projected changes.
Every professional sports team has to have an esports professional team. There you go. Break ground. Global tournament of esports. Since I'm the gaming expert here, it seems to be.
Look at that chair, mate.
Exactly.
So, actually, luxury. As you are the e-gaming expert, why does everybody? I mean, I don't play rugby games at all. So why does everyone say that that John Olamu Rugby is the last, or is the only decent rugby game we've ever had?
Oh, jeez. Now that game came out mid-90s.
Yeah.
And I mean, If it came out today, it would be absolutely atrocious. It was a terrible game when you break it down. But it was fun. It was enjoyable. It didn't have a knock-on rule. I mean, that's how, really, if you want to be proper about it, you could drop the ball forward and just someone else pick it up and carry on going. That's how probably unrealistic it was. But that's the thing. It was fun. It was enjoyable. It was easy to play. You could play with your friends. It was kind of not lighthearted to be kind of cartoony not a simulation, but like an arcade sort of thing. It was real enough, but for its time, you know, that was quite breaking out, cutting edge sort of game. So I think it's just a lot of people are pretty nostalgic about it. I'd still say it's the greatest game about, because that was one of the great times of rugby. But these days, it would need a massive, massive refresher. But yeah, it's just been the game all along, and nothing is quite probably, I think, broken that ceiling like that game originally did. When it came out, it just destroyed everything because there was nothing else like that. And it was popular among people that didn't play rugby, and it just kind of broke all those barriers. New games haven't done that. They come out, rugby fans don't really like them. Yes, they may execute the sport better. Definitely they do than John Lowe Rugby, but they don't engage the player. They don't bring new people to play the game. They don't expose those new viewers or players to the game. So that's really what it struggles to do, and I think that's where John Lowe Rugby really did stand out the most thing, just the way that it just broke everything open, and it was a game you'd see in every country around the world because it was one of the better PS1 games of that period. It was up there with Shane Warne cricket, did the same for cricket, so that's probably why Brian Lara cricket, similar sort of things. So that's why I think it's just that there, and everyone goes back to it. It's that nostalgia factor as well. You played that a lot when you were a kid. I did. Weeks.
So okay, so basically, what we is that the current games, the graphics are fine, the gameplay is technically okay, but it's just not engaging. It's not fun, right? Okay, that's what
they could be. I mean, it could be a lot better. Like I said the other day when we were talking about it, they don't have the big budgets. They're not made by the big games, and neither was John Lomber Rugby though, to be fair. But because of the time it was and what it was up against as well, you know, FIFA wasn't established, Madden wasn't established. None of those things were established. They are in there. Growing time as well. So if that game continued to be produced yearly or bi-yearly or something like that, we could be looking at a similar sort of franchise in the rugby gaming as well. But it didn't. That was it until I think the mid-2000s sort of thing when that really changed and went to EA and they tried to jump on it. Didn't really get that same sort of grasp and they pulled the pin on it, not making enough money, not having the market out there to do it. But yeah, these days, the game's licensing is a bit of a problem because you've got two now currently main probably developers of a game. So you've got the guys that make the Rugby Challenge series, and you've got the All Blacks, the Springboks, the Wallabies, those sort of Southern Hemisphere teams. And then you've got the guys that make the rugby, whatever, number 18, 15, 20, that have got mainly the Northern Hemispheres, the islands, Georgia's, countries like that. So you've got straight away a split between that. And realism is a big deal these days because people want to play them. So I'm going to go technical on you here. modding games is massive, because people buy these games and they have half the nations licensed. They want to be able to modify the game so they can get every team licensed. Then it's got to be updated. That sort of thing has got to be key. You don't want to be going into a game and you're seeing the All Blacks team flying through with Christian Cullen and Tana Rumanga and players like that when you're expecting to see the current mob of Richie Moangas and that sitting out there playing for the All Blacks. So it's got to be up to date. It's got to be moddable. It's got to keep current. And then it's just got to be a good game. It's got to be fun. It's got to be accurate. And I guess we go back to the rules sort of thing as well, because it's so hard to implement so many things. When you have about 25 million penalties sort of breakdown, how do you implement that into a game? So it makes it hard, and it just makes it a difficult game to make. No question about that. Probably compared to other sports like football, and that's a lot more straightforward. But definitely, it could be a lot better. Rugby 20, though, has got a bit of more exposure this year, especially with the MLR jumping on it. Has opened it up massively in America. But, I mean, not the greatest game. And you want it to give a good display of what the sport's all about as well, because they don't do that at the moment, I don't feel. It makes the game look probably a bit slow and a bit confusing and just not as good as it could be. So there's a lot of room to improve, but someone's just got to put their money in it. And I guess if World Rugby's going to get behind it, then that could certainly happen. If they get some money into it, get a consecutive, consistent sort of schedule of an improvement game, that's where it's going to come out. Because these games are getting better, like Rugby 15, 18 and 20, definitely massive improvements, but it needs to be 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. That's what it needs to be. Rugby Challenge, the first one came out early 2010s. Three of them in over 10 years. It needs to be, you know, 8 to 10 of them in 10 years. Consistency and development getting better and better every year, and then you've got more money going into it as well. So there's a lot can definitely improve it, but yeah, just need more games. More games, more money.
Is it possible, look, I'm a Springbok fan, so I was wondering, is it possible that I could see Richie Mwanga playing for the All Blacks?
Yes.
Yeah, that'd be great, thank you. I'd just
playing
like
for the All Blacks?
To,
he already like does.
To, yeah, no, but I mean, I'd love to see him start against the Springboks.
Oh, I'm with you now. I thought you were going to say you wanted to play for the Springboks. And I'm like, oh, well, technically that's possible as well. Anything's possible. Anything's possible.
Oh, dear me. The
definitely the All Blacks and see Richie Mwanga starting. That would be awesome.
You can do that for sure. I'll do a video just for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, dear. Well, apparently, this is so. Chris Rivers Bailey reckons it's almost impossible for a tier one nation to beat a tier two nation. Tier nation with a tier two nation. If you mean that's in rugby 08. I think in rugby 20 you can, because as you say, MLR jumped onto it, and I think Ilgroni's got Fiji and actually went all the way to the finals. So they can actually get some good in rugby 20 you can. But as you say, MLR jumping onto it has given it a big boost.
And needs exposure.
That exposure was, yeah. It'll be interesting to
and
see whether they continue
that. Backed up with actually a good title as well. Because the last thing you want to do is expose a piece of crap.
Well, yes. Yeah. True. That is true. Cool. I think we've run through most of them basically, yeah. But on the whole, do you think we want to... Do we need to get things like Hawkeye involved to police the offside line, or do just the linesmen have to do their job?
Now, if I was going to pick on anything about that thing, would be time. Would it see more time wasted because, Hawkeye thought you're a half a toe over the offside line? Would it be going back and watching too much stuff? That's my only concern. Yeah, it's a good idea. It would police things a bit better, but will we see more TMOs going tap, tap, check, check, hey, stop, the game, you know, six phases later, he hit his front, you know, big toe over the offside line, you know, 16 phases back there. Then you got to watch a replay 100 times.
I think what you could do without slowing the game down is you could, somewhere along the line, this is just conjecture, right? I'm not saying exact structure, but something like, weren't called up for it, but what shows that you've been now in the last phases offside three times. The next time you offside is a straight yellow card, right? So the next picks up the person who's offside goes straight yellow card. You could use as a deterrent. So maybe it doesn't slow the game down, but we are seeing that you are consecutively offside. It's coming, right? So that the game starts to open up. That's just an idea.
But look, we kind of said that, oh, you know what, we'll be seeing lots and lots of red cards for players being taken out of the air. We did for a few weeks, and then the players adapted. Yeah. Yes, yeah. It would slow the game down for a few weeks. And then all the players would take one step back. Yeah. It's solved. It's not difficult, folks, to stay onside if you want to. All right?
Exactly. So I'm with you, Paul.
I don't mind having two or three weeks of really slow games if it means it sorts the problem out for the next 20 years.
I would love to see what they do in football where it's not visible on the field itself live, but on the screen they show you where the scrimmage is and they show you where the 10-yard line is, where you need to reach within four downs in order to get another set of downs, right? Another to cover 10 yards. So I would love every time there's a breakdown, all you need is somebody who is skilled and knows the rules, but to just click on the last feet and on the screen, simply we see where the offside line is. That would be awesome. It's completely possible.
No,
right? So that's paint on our screens.
Christopher's ever said two referees. No, 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 not more referees on the pitch. No.
No.
We don't need more referees.
Just see where the offside line is, and then you can start to you know how many of these defenders are pushing their luck.
Yep. Cool. Well, thank you guys for another fun chat yet again on the Hash Rugby Chat. We'll be back next week at 8 p.m. Don't worry, there will be Hash Rugby Chats going on even through lockdown and no rugby. Also, tomorrow night at 8 p.m. we have Do You Know Sport, the only New Zealand sports quiz that I'm aware of anyway. So join us at 8 p.m. tomorrow night for Do You Know Sport, on the New Zealand Sport Rugby Facebook page. The recording will also come out on the podcast as well. I've just had a chat with the head of Wakaama, or the Outrigger Canoeing here in New Zealand, so that interview will come out tomorrow. And I've also got another interview lined up with the CEO of Tasman Rugby on Thursday. And I've got an interview on Friday about scrummaging. So look, guys, lots of content is coming up. Don't forget to subscribe both here on Driving Maul, but also over there on New Zealand New Zealand Sport Radio as well. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, John, and thank you, Stephen.